Please welcome in our new sponsor, Underdog Fantasy. Go to underdogfantasy.com and you'll discover that Underdog Fantasy is the best and easiest place to play fantasy sports. Underdog Fantasy lets you draft a fantasy dream team in minutes. Sign up now with the code POWERTRIP and you'll double your first deposit up to $100 in bonus cash when you make your first deposit of $10 or more. That's right, deposit $100 and get $100 for free. Underdog keeps it simple with their easy-to-use website and mobile apps. Pick between 2 and 5 players to fill out your pick'em slip, get every pick right, and take home some cold, hard cash. Use that promo code POWERTRIP and get your first deposit doubled up by $100 by Underdog. That's underdogfantasy.com. Use the promo code POWERTRIP today.
The upcoming presentation is a two-man power trip of wrestling podcast production.
What's up, guys? It's the phenomenal AJ Styles. You're listening to the two-man power trip.
Hey, Johnny. Cool, man. What's going on? We ready to go or what?
Welcome to the two-man power trip of wrestling. I'm your host, JP John Paz. With me today, a very special guest. Of course, he's a country music star. He's a DJ. He's on TV, of course, and most importantly, a former WCW superstar. He is Mr. Chad Brock. Chad, welcome to the two-man power trip. How you doing?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me. This is going to be different. I'm kind of not so technical. I'm technically challenged, I should say. So this is kind of cool.
Yeah, no problem. So what's going on in your world? What have you been up to? I know you've been keeping busy.
Let me tell you something. I have been busy raising children. They're both, one is in college, one is about to graduate from high school. I stayed out of the music industry, you know, to be a dad. So now that they're grown, I'm back doing a television show in out of Fort Worth and in Nashville. It's on the Country Network, and it's called the Chad Brock Show. And it's kind of a funny thing, because in 2008, I started the network with another couple guys. And it got, we had a few people that got involved that were not the kind of folks we want to deal with. And so it got kind of strange, and I got out, and now that some friends of mine bought it and it's doing great, they asked me to come back and do a show on it. And we've already shot about 14 episodes so far, and I have a new record deal. So I'm back, about to start touring again this year, and I'm excited about that. It's been a while since I've been on the road.
Wow, keeping very busy. You jumped right back in. TV, radio, absolutely. I mean, music. I mean, you're right back into things.
Yeah. There we go.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say you froze for a second there. Sorry about that. Yep. Yeah. So what's going on, like, as far as music? Is it new music? Are you going back to the hits? What are you doing as far as music?
Well, it's new music. We've got quite a few new songs, and I'm back writing a bit. I wrote. Of course, I had I wrote Yes, which was my biggest hit. I wrote that, but I'm back writing again. In fact, I'm headed up to Nashville tomorrow. I'll be writing next week. And well, I'm doing also a tribute. There's a buddy of mine passed away, Daryl Singletary, who was, to me, one of the best country music singers of all time. Passed away in 17. And so we do a tribute, kind of a thing, and raise money for charity. And we're doing it next week. So I'll be doing that show, which I'm excited about. It's been a while since I've been on that stage in Nashville, but I'll just do three songs and be a part of that. But mostly it's been all the way up into Wisconsin and Minnesota and Illinois and Ohio, all these different fairs, you know, when you go and you go up and you sing, most of the time I'll just sing one song and it's Yes. And, you know, people recognize the song, which it was a big song for me, still is. And they start booking shows right away. So we've booked a lot of shows this year so far, and I'm looking forward to it.
What do you think about just current state of country music? It's a lot different, right, nowadays, just the sound and everything?
You know what? Music, country music especially, is cyclical. Your bro country, I think you might be talking about a little bit about bro country and the kind of stuff they're doing now. To tell you the truth, I believe it's going away. You hear a lot of folks who are kind of tired of it. They want country music back. So that's what you're seeing is a resurgence of 90s country, early 2000s country. You're seeing a big resurgence of that. You know, I'll give you a couple examples of artists. You know, there's some really good ones out there. Luke Combs, for instance, you know, he doesn't look like he looks like he could work at a grocery store, but the guy is an amazing artist, amazing talent, and he's a country music. He just sings great country music. You know, so there's a few of them out there that are doing what we did back in the 90s and are having really good success at it. And I couldn't cut a bro country song if it was in front of me. I wouldn't want to do it. I'd refuse. It's just something that's not in my repertoire, as I say. It's just something I don't like to do. I like country music, and we're gonna cut the next record. We're gonna redo a couple songs that we're going to redo. Yes, I don't believe Yes was ever released in Europe. It was released. It was number one in Canada, number one here, but I don't ever think it was released overseas. And so we're going to release it in the UK and probably other places over there. And we're going to cut it. We're going to redo it and cut it again. So we'll own the masters, and we'll own it instead of Warner Brothers. And we're going to do that and some other things. So it's a unique business now. It really is. It's changed a lot, but doesn't mean I have to change with it, if you know what I mean. I can still do what I love to do and continue making good music.
Yeah, because to me, it's like that Toby Keith, Trace Adkins, like that kind of rock country. Yeah. So to speak, kind of a little bit of country rock is good. The country pop, you know, that kind of stuff is no good to me.
Just, you know, I appreciate all music. I appreciate all good music, I should say. There's a lot of stuff out there that I could, you know, I wouldn't walk across the street to watch. If they gave me a ticket, I wouldn't go. But there is stuff out there that is really good, no matter what the genre is. I mean, I'm a big fan of Southern rock. I grew up in Florida where the Lynyrd Skynyrd and Molly Hatchet and 38 Special and those guys, love those guys, love that kind of music. You know, every once in a while I'll throw one of those in my show. But it's just stuff that you grew up on listening to in high school, but it always seemed to go back toward traditional country music, and that's what we're doing now. I've got a few songs. I've got a song. I don't know if you watch Yellowstone or not. Everybody's a big fan of Yellowstone.
Oh yes, big time.
And,
great show.
I found a song. Actually, a buddy of mine wrote, who actually wrote the first single I ever cut. His name's Tommy Schneider, and he's the CEO of the Country Network. Tommy wrote a song with another guy, and we listened to it, felt it wasn't the right song for the guy he wrote it for. It was a little bit too mature, I guess. It was, you know, he was too young for it. And it would be what, I guess, Rip would say to Beth, you know, it would be one of those kind of deals. It would be such a great song. I've listened to it 1,000 times. There's some things I'm going to change about it. With the way that he cut the guitar vocal was not my style. It was more of his style of doing it, but we're going to change it up and do it in a 90s version, but updated, you know, updated way of doing it. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens here in the near future.
Great show. They always have good music on there. Yeah, great show, Yellowstone.
Yeah, it really is. And I've seen some lot of good stuff come out of that. And it's kind of funny to watch shows like that change things so much. It'll change television. It'll change. It'll bring back things, you know. It's like the urban cowboy days brought back country music to brought back that whole thing. So I think this is doing the same thing, and it's bringing back a simpler way of life, you know, and to realize that, boy, that's beautiful out there, and you know, and out in that whole Yellowstone area. I've been out there many times in Montana, and just living in the country, and these cities drive me nuts. You know, where every time you turn around, it takes you 45 minutes to go 2 miles. I'm not about to. I hate that kind of stuff. It's just not fun for me. So I you know, when I'm home, I'm home. But I live in Columbia, South Carolina now, and I will only be here until probably November. And then I'll move back to North Georgia and the mountains of North Georgia, and looking forward to getting back there, because I love that area there. It's just peaceful and quiet, and it's just a good place to live and retire one day.
Oh yeah. Now, as far as the music industry, were you technically in the music industry first or the wrestling industry first? Were you a pro wrestler first or a musician first?
No, I was a singer first and foremost. And here's the story. So it's kind of a very funny story. I had moved to Nashville. I had never really done anything but walk into Warner Brothers and never really left. They didn't know what to do with me because of my size. They didn't know, they wanted me to lose weight. I lost down to 200 pounds. I can't stay 200 pounds. My body doesn't let me do that. So I started training again, and I got myself back up to about 255. And I was at Warner Brothers, and this was so long ago, Faith Hill was working on her second album.
Wow.
So this was 94. And I was just listening to the vocals and just getting an idea, just listening, paying attention. And the president of Warner Brothers walked in, and I had just left the gym. I had a tank top on. I remember I had a good pump on, and you know how guys will walk up to you and they'll grab your arm, you know, or something, you know, just, boy, what have you been doing? You know, well, I just got there at the gym, you know, and I said, Jim Ed, you wouldn't assign me to a record deal that when I weighed 200 pounds, I said, I can't stay there. My body doesn't let me. And, I could see the wheels were turning, and, so that was a Friday. That Monday, I got a phone call, and it was the strangest phone call I've ever had. It was, "What do you think about professional wrestling?" And I said, "I'd watch it, of course. I've got a couple friends who are a part of it." There was a guy by the name of Clark Haynes who wrestled years ago back for WCW, and it's from my hometown of Ocala, Florida. And I got in touch, and they offered me, they said, "Look, we want you to become a professional wrestler. We think we have a built-in, you know, audience there, country music, wrestling, the whole nine yards." And my words were, "You want me to do what?" And they had asked me to find out about it. I actually made one phone call to Eric Bischoff that day. That was a Monday. That Wednesday, I was in the power plant in Atlanta.
Just like that.
Yeah, just like that. The first person they put me in the ring with was Craig Pittman, and who was a monster of a man. And you know, when it comes to wrestling, first thing I learned how to do was wrestle. I mean, it was something. He threw me around like I was a 2 year old. I would go outside, I would throw up, I would come back in, he would do it again, I'd go back outside, I'd throw up, come back in and do it again. We did it 4 or 5 times, and they said, "We'll see you tomorrow." And I think they were testing me to see if I would quit, you know, and I didn't quit. So there it went, and next thing you know, I'm being taught by Jody Hamilton and a couple other guys over there, Mike Winter, and we called Sarge, Dwayne, it was very interesting. That whole, you know, it's like everything else in this world. It's very similar to the music business, because it is entertainment, of course, and I had the opportunity to advance a little bit faster than most because I had a record deal. And there were a lot of folks in the business there who did not like that.
Yeah.
You know, there were a couple of guys that were booking, you know, the bookers, and they got me a couple of times. They were, and I got a phone call. It was before Jody passed away. I got a phone call from Jody and Jody Hamilton. And for the folks who don't know Jody, he was one of the original assassins back in the 50s and 60s. And he was such a fine man. And, he said, "Chad, I want to apologize." He said, "They were trying to hurt you. They wanted you gone." And it was Kevin Sullivan. It was Arn Anderson, a couple other people like that, who I did not get along with. And they wanted you gone. They wanted to hurt you. Every time I'd wrestle, it was a shoot. It was a fight. And it got to the point, I wrestled, and they did something with, I guess, where Sarge or Dwayne, it made him a leprechaun, and with this whole thing, and I had a match in Orlando, the Saturday morning matches in Orlando, and he threw me out of the ring, and my leg got caught, did a split no man should ever do, tore everything in my lower half of my body, and I was pretty much done at that point, but I was still warm, and I wrestled one more match, and I wrestled Kevin Sullivan in about a 2-minute match, and you know, Kevin's finishing move was to jump on your stomach.
Yep.
Oh boy, you know, oh, that hurt. You know, it was one of those kind of weird things. And the next day I couldn't move. Literally, I could not move. And they sent me back and they tried to figure out what was wrong with me. And after 4 or 5 months of everybody in the world grabbing a hold of your testicles and saying, cough. I said, it's not that. It's not a hernia. It's not anything. I said, it's something else. And they finally did a MRI and found out that I tore the adductor muscle from the inner thigh muscle from my pelvic bone. Literally tore the hip completely up.
Ouch.
And and so now, as of 2011, I have an artificial hip, and it all came from wrestling. But I have no regrets at all. You know, I do not. I don't hold grudges. Arn was hurt very badly. I don't know if he has any use of his left arm or whatever it is now. I don't know, but I hold no grudges to anybody. I know they tried to hurt me, and they did. But I met some really nice guys in the business that were really wonderful, Macho and Sting and Diamond Dallas Page is still to this day one of my dear friends, and wrestling guys like Ming and the Barbarian was like a ballet. It was great. It was just some of the coolest stuff I've ever done. And those guys could have ripped my face off if they wanted to, but they took care of me, and they had great matches. Remember Hugh Morris?
Oh yeah.
Great wrestler, man. He did a backflip off the top rope and landed right across me, and it was great. But I've had an interesting, I've had an interesting time. People ask me all the time, did I enjoy wrestling? And I did to a certain extent until I found out they were trying to, they wanted me gone. And that was when I, decided that I really didn't care much, for it anyway. But it's always brought up. It's something fun to talk about. I can still say I'm the only professional wrestler out there with 2 number one country records under my belt in the whole world, which is kind of cool. It was interesting. I'll tell you a funny story, and I tell this all the time, and people get a kick out of it. In 1995, we were wrestling in Nashville, and I wasn't wrestling that night, but Macho had wrestled, and somebody said, Chad, would you mind taking Macho back over to the hotel? And I had just bought a new Z71 pickup. So I pulled the truck around, and Macho comes out, and he gets in the truck and goes, oh, nice truck. And I'm thinking, dude, get out of character. Just get out of character.
Yeah.
And he never, and I knew him till the day he died. And every time I would see him, it would be, hey, Chad, how are you? Yeah. And he just never, ever got out of character. And he was so kind to me and had a wonderful time with him. And guys that I hung out with a lot in Tampa when I was doing radio in Tampa, got to know quite a few guys that were pretty funny. The Big Show, good guy, man. Just guys like that could do whatever they wanted to in wrestling and were nice guys, and they're nice to people, and they're good to their fans. There's just some guys that are so strong. It blows your mind how strong some of these guys are. Pick you up with one hand against the wall, and for the fun of it, Goldberg. I remember a time Goldberg, we were in Tampa, and I picked on him or something. I was playing with him, and he picked me up against the wall with one hand. And I looked him in the face, and I said, if you don't let me down, I'm going to kiss you right in the mouth. He dropped me real quick, So Bill was a really wonderful guy, just a great guy. And I got to know The Rock a little bit before He took off like a rock, you know, like a rocket, no pun intended. But I got to know those guys, you know, very nice guys, you know. But I don't know. One of the toughest matches, I'll go back, one of the toughest matches I ever had was with Benoit.
Oh, I didn't know you worked Chris Benoit. Awesome.
Yeah,
okay.
I worked Chris, and that was, I remember the match. I was supposed to take three of those Benoit chops. You know, he was something else with those chops. He hit me the first time, and I went down. I wasn't going to take another one. I don't care. I was not taking another Benoit chop, and I gave him a receipt for that one because he knocked the crap out of me, and I never wrestled him again. Bless his heart, you know. What happened in 2007 when he killed his family, killed his family, you know, and the steroids. I know they're still studying his brain and those kind of things. So that broke my heart, you know. But I had guys like Curt Hennig, wonderful, just great guys, you know, and I did some stuff with when I was with Warner Brothers, and I did a Monday Night Nitro out in Boise, Idaho.
Yeah, in August of 99. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, and I took on all three of the West Texas Rednecks, Hennig plus the two other big old boys, and it was interesting and a lot of fun. It was just a blast to do that. But that was the last time that I did anything with wrestling was 1999.
Crazy.
I got asked to do a couple of things. You know, there's a movie coming out, and I think Ming is in it, and a few other people are in it. And they asked me to do the music for it. And I said, I wish I could, because Warner Brothers owns the music that they wanted, and it would cost them an arm and a leg. And so I said, look, if I own the music, I would gladly just give it to you to be in the movie. But I couldn't do that because Warner Brothers would want to license it. And of course that cost a lot of money.
Yep. So how did that happen though in 99 though, when they bring you back, how did that all go down? Cause I know Bischoff at that point was bringing in musical acts.
Yeah.
He was bringing in like Master P and the No Limit Soldiers, yeah. Kiss.
Yeah.
I believe was after you guys. And so he's bringing everybody back. How did that all come to fruition with you returning and doing that, you know, basically almost like a little mini concert on Nitro?
Well, it was. And we did Lightning Does the Work, which actually I wrote that song as my intro song when I was going to come in. That was my song that I was going to, come into. And it was a big single for me at the time. And they had asked me to do this. And Kurt was trying to do this thing, I guess, as a singer, and we got into, you know, big old tiff about it, and then the next thing you know, I'm fighting both all three of them at the same time. It's just a knockdown drag out. I sang live, you know, and they got in my face, and I went at it with them. It was great. But I don't think they did that with Master P. I don't know what they did with the rest of the folks, but it was just something they wanted to do with me because of my prior wrestling. And it was a blast. They took care of me and we laughed like crazy in the backstage and thought it went great. And we were fighting all the way to the backstage. I mean, it was a knockdown drag out. It was great. And I enjoyed it. And that was the last time I did anything, you know, with wrestling. And if they asked me if they gave me $1 million and said, let's do one match right now, I would go, no, thank you. I just don't have any desire because of, that hip did me in for quite a long time.
Did they want you to have a match with Hennig or no?
No, I never did have. Yeah, well, it wasn't really a match with Hennig.
But did they think it was going to lead to a match?
They thought it would be, but at that time it was just it was just let's throw down right there. You know, it was outside. If whatever happens, happens. And so it was, I guess it was sort of a little mini match, but it was me against all three of them instead of me just against Kurt. And, but it still was great. I enjoyed that because of how good he was. He was an incredible wrestler and just a really, really nice guy. And so I enjoyed that part of it all, you know, I do miss talking to Kurt. I really do. And he was one of the good guys.
Did you have a good relationship with him just as far as like going out, hanging out, having beer together, stuff like that?
Yeah, absolutely. We did. You know, there was a few guys that I would see and you know, we go to the gym, in Nashville, you know, not Nashville, but in Atlanta, we all worked out at the same gym and Sting was a wonderful guy, still is, good man. He always treated me with respect and kindness. Any questions that I ever had, he answered. I lost track of Mike Winter. I don't know where Mike is now. I'd love to find out where Mike is. I don't, he always took care of me. Few other guys I keep in touch. DDP, I talked to him 2 days ago, and I'm going to have him on my show.
Wow.
I have him on the Chad Brock Show on the network coming up. And because of – it's going to be kind of funny. I'm going to have him try to teach me how to do his yoga, which is not going to be a lot of fun because I'm not very flexible.
And your hip.
Oh, and the hip. And I know. And we're going to work around the hip, but we'll figure it out. But it's going to be fun. I try to make the show – you know, I try to make light of myself. I've always done that. Even when I was working in radio in Tampa, I was the guy that, the fall guy, if you want to call it, you know, the one that, didn't worry about anything. You make fun of me. If you want to make fun of me, you know, I'll make fun of myself.
Yep.
You know, to me, that's, if you can do that, you can do anything.
Have you seen DDP being able with his leg, like literally hold his leg up in the air with his hand? Like,
I have
flexibility for this guy doing the yoga. It works.
I freaked out. I called and said, Paige, what is this, man? You got your leg over you. I said, you're 60. I don't know how old he's, 65 now. Maybe he's even older than that. His leg straight up in the air. And I'm thinking, if I did that, my whole body would like fall apart. You know, and he's taken some guys that have really been in some bad shape. But my only issue is I worry about the hip. What is it going to do? You know, will it allow me to find some flexibility? I'd like to have some more flexibility. And I don't know that part of this was when I was so big when I was born. Did the issues come from that? You know, from being so big when I was born and coming from the, out of the birth canal, I'm thinking, you know, mom said there was trouble. Did I have trouble like that? Because she told me when I was little that when I would run, my little leg would just flop, you know? And so my hips could be, you know, they were okay. You know, played football and it had pretty decent speed. But, if I didn't have those issues with the hips, would I have been faster, you know, a lot faster, but it never stopped me from doing anything. But I don't know if it came from that. So I don't know what I could do, but I'm looking forward to the trying and seeing what Paige can do. And it would be nice. I know it's yoga for regular guys and I'm a regular guy. Trust me when I say that. So we'll see what happens with it, but I'm going to bring him on the show and in Nashville, and we're going to have some fun with it.
That's great though. You guys have been able to been friends for all these years. I mean, 20 plus years. It's great.
Oh yeah. He's a good guy, man. He really is. He's you know, and he's just, he's one of those kind of guys that, he's been a true friend for a long time.
With like DDP, do you guys talk about current wrestling? Do you talk about wrestling at all? Or is just more than, you know, more than wrestling? Like, do you keep up with it?
I don't much. I keep up with some. There is a kid that I found who's a kind of, he has my last name. His name is Brian Brock, and he wrestles out of Florida, and big boy, and he's really good. And I watched him in a few matches, and he's a heel, and man, he was amazing to me. And I'm thinking, why is this kid not in WWE or somewhere large, doing better than what he's doing now? So I had him send me some stuff, and I sent it straight to DDP, you know, and it was like, because he's good. He really is. You know, he was taught, by Steve Kern, out of Tampa. So, he's got that good, a good teaching right there. You know, and I guess he's retired now. Kern has, but this boy can really, really wrestle, and he's a good heel. I just thought he belonged somewhere a little bit different than what he's having to do, you know, making $50 to $100 a match and killing himself for doing it, you know, and I respect that. I really do, but he belongs somewhere else, I believe.
Any sort of relation to you?
I don't know. We talked about that. Our families, my family, my immediate family is North Georgia, North Carolina, North Georgia, parts of South Carolina, and Virginia. His family, Virginia, West Virginia. So there may be some sort of distant, you know, relative there. I don't know. Only way we find out is do the, I guess, the DNA thing, and it's funny. I don't mess with any of that DNA stuff. I don't trust it. Yeah. You know, yep. I didn't take the shot. Won't do the DNA thing. I don't want people having my stuff. You know. Yep.
But besides, obviously, Brian and DDP, do you, like, follow the current WWE? Do you see what's going on with AEW, things like that, or you don't really pay attention?
Pay attention to much of it anymore. I really don't, because I've been so engulfed with raising babies, and they're not babies anymore, but I hunt a lot. I fish. I do whatever. I mean, I'm an outdoors guy. I like to do stuff like that. So I kind of, you know, and I left with a bad taste in my mouth. And so that's one of the reasons that I don't, you know, but there's guys that were, you know, that were friends that I do keep up with. But I don't keep up with it much. Every once in a while, I'll watch a few matches, and sometimes I'll look at that and go, oh, that's just not good, you know? And sometimes I'll watch a match and go, wow, that was incredible. It all depends on who's doing it and you know, who's wrestling. But some of it is just so over the top. It's some to me. Now, this is just me. Now, this is my opinion. Some of it, sometimes it's over the top a little bit too much, where it just doesn't look good, you know?
Yep.
So I kind of just, I kind of stay away from it, but that's okay.
It's definitely different. A lot of the wrestling nowadays. Yeah.
You know, but I will say this, look, it got me a record deal. It has helped me in my career. When people ask me about it, we talk about it, and yeah, they said, you did what? You know, and tell them the story about how Warner Brothers came to me, and not me going, and I was 31 years old at that time, they came to me, and I will be 60 my next birthday. And, you know, it's like, it's hard to think it was that long ago, you know, that I, stepped in the ring. It was long time ago.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I was just thinking when you were mentioning Macho before, and, you know, he's doing the voice. Yeah. I've heard that from so many of the guys. it's like he's not really in gimmick. That's who he is, right? That's who he is, right? I just was thinking about that. That's so funny because so many guys, you always hear these stories, and like the voice doesn't change. Yeah, and like,
I would see him. We would do things in Tampa when I was doing radio at WQIK in Tampa, and there'd be celebrity events all the time. And every time I'd see him, "Hey Chad, how are you?" Yeah, and that neck would just bulge out, you know, and he looked like he was just going to just all of a sudden go and just blow up, you know.
Yeah.
And but he was so nice and he was so cool, you know. Did get a chance to spend a lot of time with Hogan. He was too big, you know. I stayed away from. I asked him to play bass on. He's a pretty good bass player. And I had asked him, if he would like to come and play bass on one song on my first or second record, I think. First record, I believe. And he was sarcastically said something. And I just said, "Well, don't worry about it. You know, thanks for, you know." And I left it alone. But I thought it would be kind of a cool thing to have Hulk play bass on one of my songs. But he had no interest in doing anything, you know, at all. So I was like, okay, I left it alone, left him alone. And so I didn't spend much time with him at all. And that was okay. But he never treated me with any disrespect. The only people, again, that treated me with disrespect were Arn and Kevin. And that was because they wanted me out, and I get it. I understand. I'm not a dummy. I understand when, you know, if you're not, now if you're not wanted somewhere, they were the bookers at the time. And so they could do what they want to do. But, I don't know that, Eric knew that at the time. I don't know if he did or not. The last time I saw, I sang the anthem in Tampa somewhere, boxing match, some fight or something like that. And I did the anthem. That was years ago. That was the last time I saw Bischoff. I don't know what he's doing now. I don't have any idea, you know.
He's got a number one seller book he just came out with, and he's got a very popular podcast called 83 Weeks, which is about WCW's 83 Weeks of Dominance. Yep. There.
I'll tell you one thing. It was definitely a unique, you know, I was one of the lucky, you know, they offered me a contract. I learned how to do it. I didn't, had a match that, it was before the Saturday night matches we used to have in Atlanta. And I can't remember who I wrestled, he missed the finishing move. He missed his move, and I had to think real quick. And my finishing move was the bulldog, but I had to do something totally different. Rolled him and pinned him. And that next day I was called in. They gave me a contract. You know, it wasn't a big one, but hey, it was, you know, that time before my first album came out, when you're making $1,000 a week wrestling and you're got you're making another, you know, $1,000 a week writing music, it was pretty good money, you know, pretty good money at that time, you know, back in the 90s. I was one of the lucky ones because there was a lot of artists that were starving back then. I call them starving artists, but I got lucky at that time.
When you were about to sign your deal, was it shocking? Like, did you expect to sign it? And who's the one that actually like gives you the contract? Jody?
Bischoff. It was Bischoff.
Oh, Bischoff himself. So it was Eric himself. Okay.
Yeah, Bischoff did. He called me in the office and I signed a 3-year deal. And it was it started out as $1,000 a week, and then it moved. It could have gone up as I progressed. It could have gone up to upward to $1 million. It was, you know, according how I moved up into this or that, you know, if I was on whatever shows, you know, or if I was did this or did that, it was almost, it was merit-based, I should say. And, but it was something I had never seen before. And it was a good deal of money. And at that time for me, and I was okay with it, and I did it. But I tell you, wrestling beat the hell out of me. It really did.
Were you thinking like, wrestling is it now and forget about music? Or was
no way, no way, no way, no way. Music to be honest with you, I did not want to wrestle. I had no interest in it whatsoever, but I wanted a record deal. So at that point in my life, your thought process, and it's kind of funny, the reason I say this is that you get in your mind certain things, and I wanted that deal. I wanted to have that opportunity to make music. And if I had to do this, if I had to put my body through this, I was going to do it. And then after I got, you know, after getting hurt really bad and actually it retired me. I couldn't wrestle anymore. I spent 9 months in rehab with an injury that would not heal itself. I mean, they couldn't go in and reattach it because it was a partial tear with strain, meaning the doctor explained to me, like, have you seen those meat things where they take it and they just like, or you can just scrape the meat like this.
It looked gross. Like
they had taken that hole, you know, and just tore it up. And he told me the only thing we do is just heal. And I had 9 months left on my contract. And I just didn't want to do it anymore. And luckily I had music that Warner Brothers thought would work, and we did it and it worked. And I did 3 albums on Warner Brothers. Then things like everything else change. Different people come into the label. At that time they were getting rid of anybody over 50 who at that point made too much money. You know, if you know what I mean, it was one of those kind of deals.
Yep.
They got rid of a guy named Bob Sapariti, who was the general manager, who was a brilliant music man. I still talk to Bob today. Bob is 75 years old and he is a joy to talk to. Bob was the kind of guy that he was in NAMM, and Bob was that guy that Bob was the go-to guy. If you needed something, you go to Bob. You know, if you needed, I mean, anything now, I'm talking anything. It's like, you know, he lived in a different place than everybody else. You know, it's almost like a movie could be made from Bob's life. You know, he was the go-to guy for anything you needed. Bob could find it for you. But he was such a good music guy, and they got rid of him. They brought in a guy from L.A. who wouldn't know a country song if it slapped him in the face. And he looked at me and told me that the next biggest artist to come out of Warner Brothers would be an Australian alternative girl. And he named her, and to this day, I couldn't tell you her name because she didn't do anything.
Yeah, I have no idea.
You know, so I said, I went to Jim Ed, straight to Jim Ed Norman, at the president of Warner Bros. At the time, and I said, with Chris at the helm, I'm out. I don't want to be here. I don't want to work with him. He doesn't know a country song if it hit him in the head. So I'm done. But I already had a record deal under my belt. I wasn't stupid. I'd already set something up and got and had an offer on the table already with Broken Bow, which is huge now. They've got Jason Aldean. They've got Craig Morgan. They've got Lainey Wilson. They're a big label now. They weren't back then. I was their oldest artist, I guess, or the one that had hits. And so they thought they could, but they didn't have what they needed in place to move forward and get it going at that point in time. It just took some time. And so I kind of did a record with them that really never did anything. And I ended up leaving in 2005, my last tour date. And went into radio and loved it. Was home every day, raising children and having a blast, and working on the Country Network, trying to get that going. And so we did all that, and I got out of the business totally for a while, in which I was miserable, you know. So, but I'm back in doing what I love to do again. And, you know, it's kind of funny. I don't understand how lucky I got, you know, and your Lord's been good to me, I guess, because I, offered the television show. The next thing you know, I got offered a record deal, and they're letting me do what I want to do this time. Cutting great, you know, I've always been a song guy. Let's find the best songs we can find. And I've seen too many artists try to come back, and they put out songs that, you know, aren't worth cutting, you know?
Yep.
If you're going to do it right, or don't do it at all. You can tour, you can always tour and make money. And, you know, a lot of guys have a lot of hits and they can tour forever. But if you want to come back and you want to go back to radio, if you want to come back out and do things, you better be able to compete with that, with the younger guys that are getting great songs. And so hopefully we'll have some stuff that in the near future that will compete with, you know, the new guys that are out there these days. And luckily I'm singing as well as I did back in the earlier days. And so we'll see what happens.
Do you miss wrestling at all, though? I know, obviously, you're still buddies with DDP, but do you miss the business at all?
No, I do not. You wanted the truth. It got me to a certain point in my life, in my career. That's about as far as I wanted to take it. You know, because I got in at such a late age. I got in, I was 31. And most of those guys were, you know, fresh out of college. Maybe they were drafted by the NFL. Maybe they played 1 year and did not go any, you know, past that. It's just something I never thought about doing ever in my life. Yeah, I'd watched it, you know. I'd watched it all my most of my life. I'd watched wrestling and watched Dusty, and I got to know Dusty very well. And Dusty was a dear friend before he passed away, and we used to have hours of long conversations, just me and him. Just we would sit and talk. And
that's awesome.
And I loved him. He was such a wonderful guy. And it broke my heart when he passed away, but he was my hero. If I had a hero in the business, it was Dusty. He treated everybody with respect and with kindness, and he was the best I have ever seen, you know, in the business. The best at everything he did, you know, entertainment part of it, or the, you know, when he did his interviewing, his interviews were the best. He was it, man. He was cool, you know. So I got to know him pretty well. And he called a few of the matches that I was in, and and I was in a match against Mike Enos, and I remember Dusty saying, "Looks like that's all for Chad Brock." You know, I had Dusty's voice, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I had definitely Mike took care of me. Mike was a great wrestler too. Mike Enos.
Yes, underrated. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Underrated. You're correct. Very good wrestler though. And he was part of that Dungeon of Doom thing, I think, was going on back then. He was good, man. He took care of me. I did some things that I had never done before when I wrestled him. I dropped on my neck. You know, it was definitely different, but it was he took care of me, you know, which was good.
So Big Dust, that was your favorite? When you were a fan growing
up? Yeah.
Big Dust down there in Florida?
In Florida, we had four stations. We had ABC, NBC, 2, 4, and 6, and 11, which was actually Channel 44 out of Tampa. And I always watched Dusty, and it was Dusty wrestling Ivan Koloff, or, you know, this is always so much fun. Just all those guys. Dusty told me about a match that he had with, oh my goodness, I'm losing my mind here with names, but he ended up in a lot of movies. He's still living, I believe. Golly.
Terry Funk.
Yes. Terry Funk. he told me this. He said, we had an hour match. And I'm thinking to myself, what are we going to do for an hour? And he said, they went and they stuck chairs underneath the ring. And they go in there and they grab the chair and they sit, and Dusty would sit in the middle of the ring and wait for Terry to come out, and Terry would run up and Dusty would get out, and all of a sudden Terry would sit in the darn chair and wait, and they just do that for, and the ring, I guarantee that the whole match lasted 3 minutes, but it was the funny part was the whole thing of them waiting on each other, sitting in the chairs, you know, talking smack. And that was a match for an hour, and that was entertaining, you know. And, you know, they were older. What are they going to do, beat each other up for an hour? They can't do that. But they did it in that kind of way, you know, and it was entertaining. It was funny. And the people loved it. And, you know, we laughed about that match, you know, and just stuff like that. Just, you know, that's the kind of stuff I loved, you know, the stories behind what Dusty would tell me, you know. But it was interesting to sit with him for hours and listen to what he had to say, you know.
He was great. I only got to know him a very little bit, but 2 days before he passed, I had interviewed him. I thought he was just the way he sounded great. We were joking around about doing more interviews and come back next and, like, you know, doing more stuff together. And then he passed away. So I was absolutely shocked. It's like, wow, I just talked to you 2 days ago. He sounded great. So it's just like, oh man, what a shame. But he was one of those guys where I hardly knew him, but it felt like, even his two sons, when I interviewed them, they said the same thing. Dustin and Cody said the same thing. Yeah, he'll make you feel like you're buddies, because he's like, hey, absolutely. Jenny, what's up, Jenny? What's going on? What are we doing, Jenny? You're like, you know, because we had to talk to set it up, what time you want to do it, all of those. So we got to bullshit for a little bit. So it was like, wow, that's just awesome. Dusty Rhodes, holy shit.
He always made you feel like you knew him. He always made you feel like he was your best friend.
Yes.
And I think that's why people loved him so much.
Yeah.
You know, and to me, that's the best kind of entertainer is, you know, you don't know their names. A lot of folks, you don't know their names. There's a lot of people that I gave, for instance, there's one person that I've never seen to be this good in my life. 1998, I am at the Warner Brothers Music Awards in Vegas, and it's now called the Billboard Music Awards.
Yep.
And I look, I'm standing in line getting the lanyards and everything, you know, to figure out who I'm going to sit next to and the whole night, you know, kind of a deal, you know, where you're just standing in line, and I get a tap on the shoulder. I look back and it's Garth Brooks. And at that time, I'd never met Garth before. And Garth looks at me and says, Chad, how are you? Nice to meet you finally. I love Ordinary Life. I think it's a great song. And I'm thinking to myself, wow, man, the largest star in the world knows my name, knows the record I have out now, and, you know, sat there and talked to me for 20 minutes like he has known me all my life. And I've never seen anybody that good to this day can remember a name, you know, from years ago and know that person, what they did that day, you know, can remember that kind of stuff. It's just an amazing talent to be able to do that kind of stuff. So I haven't seen Garth in a while. I know Trisha very well. Trisha's father was a huge wrestling fan.
Oh, nice.
Huge. We were in 1994, we were down in Rio Wrestling in Daytona Beach, and I was down there, and Trisha was doing a show with the Daytona Philharmonic Orchestra. So she was doing the show that night, and we were wrestling the next night, same auditorium or same. So she was there, and she got on, and I knew her because of music. And she introduced me to her father as Chad Brock the Wrestler. And wow. He just lost his mind. And I became friends with, you know, his dad, her dad, and her mom. They're both passed on since then. But I was always Chad the Wrestler, never Chad the artist, the singer. It was always the wrestler because he loved wrestling. But nice, just nice people. You know, Trish has always been a friend, and she's, you know, I've got pictures of her with my daughter, and I've, you know, over the years, and, you know, take her over, look at a fish in a tank, you know, and point out the fish and talk to her when she was little, and, you know, and those kind of, and just good people, you know, just really good people.
It's funny. So many people are wrestling fans, but you don't know it until they say something about wrestling. It's like, yeah. I'm a wrestling fan. Yeah, that's great. I love that.
Yeah. You know, I heard stories about people that have, you know, watching wrestling back in the late 50s and early 60s. And when their favorite wrestler got beat or something, had something done to them, they'd shoot the television set. You know, I've heard stories about that, which cracked me up. You know, and they were into it. I mean, you know, they'd sit, that's what they did on Saturday night. They watched their, and their wrestler got beat. They got mad.
Yep.
You know, and they, sometimes they'd shoot the TV. But I have no regrets about anything I've done with wrestling and music because it put me where I am. It opened doors that would have never been opened, I think. So I have no regrets whatsoever. I wish I'd have done things a little bit differently. Hindsight's 2020 when I down at the power plant. I'd gone back because I was going back and forth to the power plant because I was writing, trying to get this record ready to go. And I did not spend as much time, and I got myself out of shape a little bit. And a couple matches, I was gassed, and I shouldn't have been. And so I look back like that, and I made some mistakes doing that. But I don't have any regrets of anything I did because it got me where I am, and it moved everything forward for me. And, there's still many years left. We're going to have a whole lot of fun coming up, and we're going to see what's going to take place the next 10 years. You know, I don't plan on, you know, I look at my parents. I lost both my parents in 20, and they died 6 weeks apart, and they stopped. And when I say that, they stopped what they were doing. They just stopped. They stopped living. And when they did that, they died. So I don't want to stop. I want to keep going. And whether it's music or whether it's something else, retirement to me is, I don't consider what I do work. You know, I don't consider music work. It's a love. It's, you know, of course you got 14-hour days, you know, but you're shooting this or doing that, you know, with TV, but I don't consider it work. You know, it's something I love to do. And so, I don't want to stop doing that, because I think once you stop doing that, that's when you stop, period. And so I'm going to keep doing it as long as I can do it.
Love that. So as we wind it down here, we'll head towards the finish. What is next for you, just as far as, is it just putting out the music, TV, radio? Give us all that.
We're going to keep doing the show. We're going to move forward. Hopefully, the show was kind of, the idea was, whenever TNN, the Nashville Network, was taken off the air and bought by, I think it was bought by CBS or somebody like that. They changed format. They, you know, they stopped, they took out country music. They weren't playing any, they weren't doing anything. There used to be a show called The Ralph Emery Show that was taken over by a good buddy of mine named Gary Chapman. And it was called Nashville Nights. And we don't have anything like that, or did not have anything like that, for artists, country music artists, to on a nightly or weekly thing, go on and play, interview, so on and so forth. So what I would like to see happen would be a nightly show like we had back with TNN. Of course, I couldn't do it every night. I would have to tape it, but, you know, but a nightly show, an audience show. There's plenty of audiences that we could bring in Nashville. They're everywhere. So love to do that. And then back out on the road, doing shows, until that one day I say enough's enough, you know, and that's, I guess that's next for me would be grandbabies.
Nice. Yes. No.
So, but that's hopefully a few years away.
Yes. Yeah.
So, that's the dream. That's the goal. And, we will see.
And where can everybody find you as far as social media wise? And obviously, well, with the country.
TCN, I tell you where people, it's really easy to find the show. A lot of folks have Roku.
Oh yeah.
Roku channel 1143. You can find it on there. You can find it on Sling TV. You're going to be able to, in February, it's going to be all over Apple. It's going to be all over the, you know, everywhere you can see things, it's going to be there. You can go to tcntoday.com or tcncountry.com. Watch the show. Again, 1143 on Roku. It's on Samsung TV. I do not know the channel on that one. I apologize. But it's over the air in a lot of areas. So it's in a lot of households. I mean, it's kind of funny. Everybody says, we're in 50 million households. No, you're not. You know, you could broadcast to 50 million households, but you're, you know, however many watch you is how many households you're in. You know, I get a kick out of that. But so hopefully grow it. And I've had some interesting guests so far. I will not keep it to country music. I will. I've had a 19-year-old world champion chef on. I've had Colonel Alan West, who is a true patriot. He is a conservative. He was a congressman out of Florida. He ran for governor against Greg Abbott in Texas. He is a true patriot, great guy. I'm a gun guy, so I'm not afraid to. We want to do some fun things with showing the people the right way the right way to have guns if you're going to have them. They have a bad name because we all know why they have a bad name.
Well, yeah.
We are not a woke show. We are a conservative leaning show, and I'll be the first one to say that. I'm very proud of that. We want to, you know, we love this country. We love everything about what's, you know, this country. And so they said, what do you want to do? And I said, y'all know me, y'all know the way I lean, and that's the way I want to go. And they said, do it. So I think there's a lot of people out there that have the same feelings that I do. So here we go. We will see. I will not do this though. I will not. I thought about running for Congress or Senate one day, but I have decided no way in the world am I going to enter politics. That is the dirtiest game on the planet. And I don't want to have anything to do with it. Yeah. But I will, you know, I will speak my mind about the way I feel about this country. I'm not afraid to. Canceled.
Yep.
You can't cancel me, you know. So, you know. Anyway, that's what I intend to do.
Awesome. Yeah. Stay away from politics. It is the worst. Yeah, that's
for sure. Oh, it is. Yeah, I'm gonna stay away from getting into it. Now I'll talk politics, but I will not enter politics.
Yes, yes. Yep. But Chad, thank you so much for all the time today. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
This has been a John Paz Power Trip production in conjunction with the Two Man Power Trip of Wrestling. You could follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Two Man Power Trip. You could check us out on Facebook. You could subscribe on YouTube. You can go to patreon.com/TMPTEmpire to become a patron. And also check out the website, TMPTEmpire.com. And buy a shirt at ProWrestlingTees.com. Two Man Power Trip, where the power lies. Brother.